Brethren, it's my privilege to bring up Brother Jerry Moore from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and his discourse for today is entitled, Picture Doctrine in Action. Brother Jerry.
Thank you, Brother Peter and Brother Tim, for your prayer. And I have to tell you that when I saw the podium move, I felt my heart jump up into my throat because I thought I was going to get a chance to hide over in the corner. So now here I am fully exposed. But I understand you're an easy group, very forgiving. And one of the things that I've been keeping track of, and Barbara and I have been kind of joking about how much of my material has already been used, what little was left, I said, told Dave Christensen, he went through very well, so I thought maybe I'd just call him up and ask him to put slide number so-and-so up and say, there's my conclusion, brethren, so why don't you enjoy the fellowship now? But they assured me that what I had to say, if nothing else, would be packaged a little differently. And so hopefully it'll be something that, though you've heard it time and time again, will bring a blessing to you. There is an idea, a doctrine, a teaching, that I believe is the most important thought or idea ever conceived. It's the reason for all that was, all that is, and all that shall be. It's the reason we were what we were, we are what we are, and we shall become what we shall become. This idea, this doctrine, is proclaimed by James in Acts 15:14, when he tells us that God, the creator of the universe, the Almighty, the one and only, desired for himself a family. What James terms a people for his name. I want you to take a moment and think about what it means to know that. Think about your best friend, your pal, your chum, somebody you shared the innermost desires of your heart with. Someone that you shared your dreams, your aspirations with. Think of what's implied in that relationship. Someone you deeply, deeply love. Someone you deeply care for. That you share with. That you feel good with. That you feel comfortable with. That you are willing to open yourself up with. And expose yourself to. God, Jehovah, has done that with each one of us. He has revealed to us what Job refers to as the longing of his heart. And if you can believe it, there's more. Because where did he go to get that family? He bypassed the holy angels. He bypassed those that do his will perfectly. He bypassed those who follow him, who glorify him, who honor him, who magnify his name perfectly in every thought, every word, every deed, every action they do, every moment of every day, through untold ages. And he put his hand down into the miry clay. And he chose those who are proud, are arrogant, are selfish, are self-centered, who practice evil. And when you think about, when you understand, when you truly comprehend what it means to be born in sin and shaped in iniquity, our hearts cry out, And we say to him, how is it possible? How can it be? How can we dare come before him? How can we aspire to be his children? How can we have any hope at all? And he responds quietly and confidently, come. Let's talk about that. Let's think about it together. Let us reason together. For though your sins be as scarlet, they shall be white as snow. And with that, he lays before us the most wondrous, the most glorious, the most astounding plan ever conceived. He begins to teach us that he had a son, a dearly beloved son. And together they created the heavens, both seen and unseen, and the earth. They created myriads of angels and spirit beings unseen to us. And on the earth, he planted a small garden and put a perfect man and woman in it. We learn that one of his sons tempted the woman, and with that sin entered the world. We learn that the perfect man and woman were driven out and condemned to death, but not without hope. We learn that through the acts and through the lives of his friends, the prophets, and those we call the patriarchs, he demonstrated for us his plans and his purposes. He made known to us his will. We learn that he made very precious promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that there would be a seed, and through that seed, all the families of the earth would be blessed. We learn through his working with the nation of Israel and those wonderful tabernacle arrangements and the rituals and ceremonies of it, that love and justice can work together and indeed redeem mankind and remove this curse of sin and death. We learn that at the proper time, he sent his son to die for us, to provide that wonderful work of the ransom and the sin offering, and to open a new and living way that would lead back to him. We learn that he gave prophecy and time elements and seasons that we could look at with confidence, especially in those times when it appeared that evil was prevailing and would overcome. And we learn that at the due time, his son would return to deal with the false systems, to deal with those who remained of his faithful followers, and to usher in a grand and glorious and wondrous kingdom that would bless all the families of the earth, and that we could have a share in that. And that at the end of a little season, when all adversaries have been destroyed, mankind and all of his creatures could look forward to blessings unimagined. You know, we're told that eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, neither have entered into the hearts of men, those who love God. But he has revealed them unto us. But I would submit to you that what he has revealed is just a small, small portion of what he has in mind, of something about this big. And why does he reveal these things to us? Why does he let us know these things? Because he wants to lift us up out of the miry clay. He wants to lift our feet off the broad road to destruction and set us squarely on the path that leads back to him and to his dear son, and transforms us into images of his son, who said about himself, I am meek and lowly of heart, Or in some translations, I am gentle and kind. And what a transformation it is. What a powerful work it is. Who would have thought? Who would have imagined? Who would have ever guessed that a bloodthirsty, religious fanatic, a murderer, a tyrant named Saul of Tarsus would eventually come to the point where he would write the 13th chapter of 1 Corinthians and say, with all meaning, with all sincerity, though I know all things and can do all things, if I have not love, it means nothing. It means nothing. And God looks forward to that transformation. He awaits it eagerly. In Job 14:15, we read that he longs for the work of his hands. You know, we hear the scripture, John 3:16, so often. We rattle it off. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever should believe in him should not perish but have everlasting life. We can say that. God so loved the world. Why? Look around. What's so lovable? What is there? But in his mind, our Heavenly Father sees potential. He sees what we can become. He sees what awaits us. And he looks forward to it with great expectation and anticipation. You know, we're told by Jesus, in my Father's house are many mansions. As if our Father has a dwelling place. And when Gabriel came to announce to Zacchaeus, the birth of John the Baptist, he said, I am Gabriel, who stand before God daily. Which would seem to imply that not everybody gets to do that. Not all the angels have that kind of access. And we also read, precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of the saints. So one of the pictures I have that this doctrine presents to my mind is God being in this magnificent dwelling. And one of the saints dying and going beyond the veil. And Gabriel, the angel, comes and knocks on the door. And our Father opens it, and he says, we have another. And God said, thank you. And closing the door. And then, yes! Excitement and joy. And he experiences the kind of thrill, the kind of excitement that the parent of a child who has been enlisted in the armed services experiences when their child returns safely from battle. They've come home. His have come home. And he says, in Malachi 3, they are my own possession, my jewels. Furthermore, he says in Jeremiah 29:11, I know the plans I have for them. He knows what he's looking forward to. He knows what he's expecting and anticipating doing with them and for them. Because he says in Malachi 3:10, I will open the windows of heaven and pour out blessings upon you more than you can contain. His intent, His purpose, is to give us this body of doctrine to turn us into those whom He will love and cherish for all time. Unfortunately, we sometimes use doctrine for other things. We use doctrine to say, who are our brethren? We use doctrine as a measuring yard of our brethren's development. We like the meat, but they're still handling the word. We study the deep things of God, but they can't handle them. When doctrinal questions were ripping the classes to shreds and separating brethren, separating families, I can remember questioning, what are the important doctrines? What are the things that we should know and understand? And so in my youthful zeal and enthusiasm, I went to 12 different brethren. And you know what? I got 12 different lists. So I put my own list together. And for years I carried it in the front of my Strong's Concordance. And then I discovered something. Brethren whom I love, brethren whom I admire, brethren whom I respected, saw things a little differently than what was on my list. And that conflicted me terribly. And so I turned to the pastor's writings, to Brother Russell's writings. And I read them with an eye to how do I answer these questions. On the question of who are our brethren, for me, I found the answer in the sixth volume in the discussion on the Passover. Who may participate? For the question of what sort of progress should I be making? What sort of doctrinal growth should I anticipate for myself and others? I found a reprint article entitled Doctrine More or Less Important. Reprint number 5284. And on the question of what doctrinal standard should I hold for elders, for speakers, for pilgrims, I could do no better than the VDM questions. I can read my printer. Reprint 5983. And when you read through those questions, read them both with an eye to what they include and what they don't. You know, God gave us these wonderful truths to weave a beautiful tapestry, a picture of His character, of His hopes, His aspirations, His desires, something that we could revel in, something that we could enjoy. And I'm reminded of a wonderful store that we have in Milwaukee. It's a family-owned business that sells Oriental rugs. And you walk in there, and you are just awestruck. These are some of the most beautiful works you could ever imagine. And they're everywhere. They have them laying on the floor. They have them hanging on the walls. They have them hanging on the ceilings. They have them on racks that display them. They have piles of them stacked open, and they have rolls of them in the corners. And the store seems endless, and they're just beautiful works of art. You know, the colors in them are rich and vibrant. And the patterns are just intricate, and the pictures are just full of designs. And the wool that they're made of is just such high quality wool. It's just luxurious. It's wonderful to rub your hand against it or to walk barefoot on it. And in the store, the owners also have a large family, several children. And when we were visiting the store, the children were like climbing over the piles of carpets, and they were rolling around. They were playing, running into the rooms and out of the rooms. And you could just hear the laughter. You could feel the excitement. You could just feel the joy. The atmosphere was so wonderful. And as we were going through, we spent hours in the store looking. And as we were looking at the rugs, the owners were telling us when we left, bring your children next time. You know, our children were small at the time. Said, bring them. We love to have them. We love to experience the joy and the excitement and the fun and the laughter that they have when they're doing this, when they're seeing this. And as I think about our response and our use of doctrine, I think of this story. And I imagine taking a group of friends in there. And I envision seeing the eyes get big and the mouth falling open as you see these wonderful works of art. And I imagine us splitting into groups, and some going over here and looking in these, and others going over here and looking in these, and others going into here, and some looking at these. And a discussion begins. What makes them so exquisite? What makes them so valuable? And some say, oh, it's the colors. It's the bright and vibrant colors. And others say, no. It's the pattern. It's the pattern. Look at the picture that the pattern presents. And others say, no, it's the wool. It's the quality of the materials. It's the high quality materials. And someone thinking to turn one over say, look, they're individually knotted and all the knots are consistent. And this is such magnificent workmanship. And so they're saying, no, it's the colors. And somebody else says, no, it's the picture. And somebody else says, no, it's the wool. And voices starting to escalate and get a little more intense. And more discussion ensuing and more. And it's like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. It's this. And others saying, no, it's, you know, it's that. And any fool would know that. And harsh things starting to be said. And temper starting to flare. And anger starting to rise up. And everybody getting so upset and so mad that they storm out of the store saying, we will never see each other again, we will never talk to each other again. And in the back room, the creators of these beautiful works stand heartbroken because their intent was to create something beautiful, not destroy relationships. Think of the excitement you've experienced. Think of the joy you've experienced. Think of the love that you've experienced. Think of the heartbreak you've experienced. And know the reason that we experience these things is because God experienced them first. He put them in us because He made us like Himself. He has felt that disappointment. He has felt that pain. He has felt what we have experienced in our doctrinal battles. And He gave them to us to create relationships with Himself and one another. As many of you know, our brother Carl Higginson passed away at the time of the Chicago Memorial Day Convention. And after the convention, there was a memorial service on his behalf. And there was a lot of discussion. Excuse me. About the life he led and about the life he was leading now. And when I hear discussions like that, it makes me think about my own death. What's it like when we close our eyes for the last time? When we open them on the other side and receive our reward. In my mind, I've come up with quite a number of scenarios, different scenarios, based upon pretty much how I'm feeling at the time, what I'm going through, how I'm feeling about my walk. And in closing, I'd like to share one of these with you, not to be morbid or not to be depressing, but just to share with you, this is a possibility. I envision in my mind that I die. And I hear the sweetest, gentlest, most tender-hearted, kindest voice that I've ever heard say my name. I look towards the voice, and it's the Son of Man. He extends his hand and says, "I'm here to take you to your reward." I look around, and I see a long dark tunnel with a bright light at the end. He puts his arm around me, and we begin moving towards the light. As we're moving, he begins to speak. He says, "You had quite an experience down there, didn't you? Many trials and difficulties. And I appreciated the way you went through them, the way you took them. But I had a little disappointment. There was a sister in your class, full of zeal and enthusiasm. I had hoped that you could accomplish great things together. But she kind of rubbed you the wrong way. And you kept your distance. There was a brother that you knew of who was having many experiences like your own. I had hoped that you would comfort him, support him, help him find his way. But you had a falling out in your youth, and you went your separate ways. And I had a wonderful message prepared for you, an answer to a prayer that was to be delivered at a convention. But you didn't go. You said you couldn't agree with the speakers, that you didn't accept their platform." We pause, and I'm trying to think of something to say. How can I respond? How can I answer? He knows my heart and my thoughts better than I. I open the door before me, and I behold a great multitude which no one can count, from every nation and tribe and people. They're clothed in white robes, and palm branches are in their hand. They are before the throne of God, and they serve Him day and night in the temple. And as I take my place, God wipes the tears from my eyes.